Well, thanks so much, Tom, and thank you for having me. I mean, you may not have had anything to do with the invitation, but it's absolutely lovely to be here and a pleasure to meet friends, old and long-standing friends and new friends as well. It's really good to see you. Great question. You may be familiar with what people call the Quiet Revival. It's quite hard to escape it these days. Not just Tom Holland expressing kind of sympathy for the Christian faith, Jordan Peterson, Ian Hesse-Ali saying she's actually started to follow the Lord Jesus, Louise Perry. But Friday, a week ago, this article, I printed it out in the Times, asked this question, have young men lost their herd immunity to Christianity? And then it cites, you know, members of the Arsenal football team, Bukayo Saka, Eze, and so forth, all seem to be expressing an interest and an allegiance to the Christian faith. Some people think on a more unsavory level, I don't know what we think about this, you know, there's the Tommy Robinson stuff, there's the Young Bob, I don't know if you come across Young Bob and his website, British nationalism side of things. But the statistics have it, 2019, 18 to 24-year-olds believing in God, 22%. 2026, same group, 37%. So there does seem to have been, and we see this in our churches and across the board, apparently 4% of young men going to church once a month in 2018, and now 21% of people 18 to 24, blokes, saying they're going to church. So now you may not be in that category, 18 to 24, bloke, and I can see, if I may say, see that, obvious reasons, but it's quite a thing. And it poses the question, you know, is God actually there? And if he is actually there, why doesn't he make himself known? And that's the question I want us to think about. And I want to suggest that God has made himself known generally. God has made himself known specifically. God makes himself known personally. So God has made himself known generally. This is the argument from creation. And if you take hold of, I think there's a sheet, isn't there? The back side of that sheet, you can see under point one, God has made himself known generally in creation. And if we had a Bible here, we'd be able to turn to a number of places where you can see that. Well, you'd expect if there was a creator, you'd have a creation. And if there is a creation, there is a creator. And Psalm 19 is a classic. The heavens declare the glory of God. The sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, night to night reveals knowledge. And then the psalm goes on along that. In fact, Romans chapter 1, what can be known about God is plain because God has shown it. His invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. I mean, that Romans verse is really interesting because it finishes with, so they are without excuse for not acknowledging and recognizing God. Well, I was sitting at our staff lunch in St. Helens the other day. We have a staff lunch. I bet you don't do that anymore. You're sent out to the sandwich bars and all the rest of it. But we do a staff lunch. We actually feed our staff. So I was sitting at the staff lunch. I happened to find myself sitting next to a member of staff who has a PhD in astrophysics. So I said to him, how did you come to believe? Oh, he said, it became increasingly apparent to me that there must be a creator because as I explored the creation, as I was doing my PhD, I came to believe. I said, you've got to write that down in a way that anybody can understand. So here we go. I know we may not all be astrophysicists here. One of the ways I believe that we see God's design in creation is in the fine-tuned universe hypothesis, which observes that a large number of the scientific constants of nature have Goldilocks values that are just right for life to exist. Now, he wrote me actually a slightly longer email than that that talked about the connection between macro and micro physics, that there are 100 billion to 2 trillion galaxies in the observable universe, but I thought that would completely confuse us. It certainly confused me anyway. But it is striking. All over the world, you'll find, you know, people who explore this creation. And that's what the apostle is talking about there when he talks about the eternal power of God. I remember speaking in Sydney, actually, out in the Blue Mountains, and they had, before I spoke, a woman there who was working, I think, in the observatory where the film The Dish was made. If you've not seen the film The Dish, you've got to watch it. But anyway, and she said, actually, it's just looking up at the night sky. Creation must be a creator, not just the eternal power, though. Do you see? And divine nature. So that's not just the immensity of his eternal power, but the complexity, the divine nature. So I had to go and see the doctor the other day. You get to my age, they call you in for checks about absolutely everything. Everything's fine. Anyway, I went to see him. And you know, as it is, what do you do for a living? I'm a clergyman. And, you know, do you have a personal faith? Oh, I don't actually. I'm an atheist. Have you ever considered the truth of Jesus Christ? Once, when I was doing my early doctor training, we were dissecting the human hand. And I stopped and thought, you just couldn't make this up. So his divine nature. I was up in Cambridge speaking the other day, just and sat next to somebody who's in computer stuff. I said, what do you do for him? I didn't have a clue what he was on, but what do you do for a living? And he said, I'm involved in working, whatever the company is there, that works on the little chip in your telephone. I said, oh, you must, this is a really ignorant thing, you must have very small hands or something like that. He said, oh, no. And then he told me, is it a billion commands on your little telephone chip? So I went when I got home and I Googled, how many neurons are there in your brain? Oh, 86 billion? Each one able, apparently, I mean, you may not think you've got quite that many, and you may think your neighbours have got far few less, but anyway, each one able to process, is it like 100,000 commands? Well, anyway, but you just think, the sheer divine nature. So you've got the immensity, the power, the eternal power, and the divine nature. Now, I know that, you know, Stephen Hawking says, oh, well, gravity just could have created it. But, you know, you can't get something from nothing. And as John Lennox put it, a similarly famous mathematician, he said, when he on reading out Stephen Hawking's quote about gravity, said that just shows that nonsense is still nonsense, even when it's spoken by a world-famous cosmologist. I mean, you think, why is it that the five-year-old, I was on the tube the other day and there was a mother with her five-year-old going towards the lift and, you know, why? And then eventually the five-year-old said, Mum, where do we come from? Even the five-year-old knows that you can't get something from nothing. So there's the general, but that's not enough, is it? Because on its own, to know that God exists, yeah, but what's he actually like? And so we move from general to specific or special revelation. God has made himself known generally in his creation. God has made himself known specifically in the person and work of Jesus Christ. And that's why I had that reading read to us from John chapter 14. Would you take hold of the John's Gospel that I think you'll find you've got on the table in front of you, and turn to page 43. I want you to have the whole gospel, because this whole gospel, it's an account of the life and teaching of Jesus, commissioned by Jesus, and it is all here to show us who Jesus is and what God has shown us in the person and work of Jesus. Turn to page 43. Now, this question of Philip is one of four questions that Jesus is asked. He's asked four questions, and this is the third. And the answer goes right on to over the page. But you can see this is the question that we're dealing with, isn't it? Verse 8, page 43. Philip said to Jesus, Lord, show us the Father, and that is enough for us. You can just understand him asking that question. He realizes Jesus is really smart. I know God's there. Okay, show us, what's he actually like? Now, Jesus' response, as I say, contains four parts. It goes over the page, but it's just this first bit that I want us to look at. Have I been with you so long, and you still don't know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Now, in other words, come on, Philip, don't you realize who I am? Have I been with you all of this time and you still haven't grasped just who I am? And then this extraordinary statement, you lawyers will like the structure of it. It's beautifully structured, isn't it? It's rebuke. Have I been with you so long? Statement. Rebuke. How can you say? Okay, and there's the statement. Anybody who has seen me has seen the Father. I mean, imagine if I was to come and say that. I mean, you'd call the people in white coats to take me away. Anybody who has seen me has seen the Creator God. It's an extraordinary statement. And actually, it's contained in a rebuke. So Jesus is saying, how can you actually say this? How can you say it? After all, Philip has seen. Philip was there when Jesus turned water into wine. Philip saw Jesus heal the official's son with just a word from over a kilometre away. Philip was there when the man who was lying paralysed for 38 years jumped up off his bed at the command of Jesus. Just a couple of days earlier, Lazarus, who had been dead for 4 days, has been raised out of the grave. Philip will see the resurrection of Jesus as that final great and extraordinary and remarkable miracle. In other words, open your eyes, look at Jesus, you see the revelation of God. We know he's there. How can I actually know what he's like? Jesus. And Philip has been walking around with his eyes shut. Okay, I've got a friend. We're going to travel back to the late 90s, early 2000s, when banks still had money. So my friend, he was on a train, down under the channel, the Euro, what's it? And obviously, banker, first class, UBS. And he was sitting there on his way to Paris to do some business early one morning. And the bloke sitting opposite, he tells the story beautifully. He says that it was a scruffy individual. This is in the days, you know, when people read their newspapers. He had a big newspaper up, so he put his newspaper up. So he says, oh, there are flies buzzing around. That's not true. But he's a scruffy individual. But people would walk through the carriage, and they would stop, and they would want to talk to this individual. And some of them would ask for his autograph. And you know how, it's a classic caricature, how it was in those days. Every now and then you'd lower your newspaper and have a little look. And so my friend, and eventually his curiosity got the better of him. He said, excuse me, can you tell me who you are? Bryan Adams. Now, you may not know who Bryan Adams is. I saw Bryan Adams live backing Tina Turner in Dortmund many years ago. But anyway, Bryan Adams, he was at that time one of the most famous rock stars in the world. And there he was right opposite him. My friend didn't have a clue, didn't mean anything to him, put his newspaper up and carried on reading. But when he got home, he had two teenage daughters. He said, you know what happened, scruffy guy, blah, 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 Bryan Adams. Dad, you could have got us tickets. You could have got his autograph. Open your eyes, Dad. Haven't you seen? God has made himself known specifically in the person and work of the Lord Jesus Christ, generally in creation. Now, there is the claim of the Christian faith. I'd like you to turn to the very last page of this account. It's not quite the last page. I'll tell you what page it is. Page 60. The purpose of this book, somebody's very helpfully put there. That wasn't written by John himself. He assumed we had a brain and could work it out for ourselves. Anyway, there we are. Verse 30 there. The purpose of this book. Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. These are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. In other words, God has made himself known generally. There's no excuse for not knowing that there is a God. It's plain as a pikestaff. Okay, it's there. God has made it generally. God has made himself known specifically. Agnosticism is no longer a valid position, apart from the cowardly. If you want to hide, you can hide under agnosticism, but actually there's no excuse for being ignorant. Because God has made himself known in the person and in the work of the Lord Jesus Christ. And this account is specifically written so that we can know him and know Jesus for ourselves. Well, you may say to yourself, well, I don't have the opportunity to see him. Well, the next part of Jesus' answer to Philip talks about his words. I mean, William Shakespeare came to our church, I mean, not recently, but in the 1590s. And there's a, I mean, he, actually, William Shakespeare, it transpires every single church in this area, claims William Shakespeare went to their church. But of course, you can't see Jesus in the flesh. That's an accident of history. But had you been around in the 1590s, you would have been at communion with William Shakespeare. And he did come to our church because he's on the electoral roll. And I can know a lot about William Shakespeare from his writing and so forth, so on and so forth. Well, here we have the truth of Jesus Christ recorded for us by an appointed eyewitness, and there are three others as well, so that we can actually know God for ourselves. And when you come to this, you find so many glorious things about God: love, justice, integrity, courage, kindness, forgiveness, everything we think is so wonderful. Now, you probably don't listen to Joe Rogan. I listen to Joe Rogan just every now and then to see what he's saying. Do you ever heard of Joe Rogan? It's pretty profane. So so there he is. But he interviews famous people. He interviewed Ben Affleck and Matt Damon just recently. Listen to the quote. This is Joe Rogan speaking. I mean, all the young things listen to Joe Rogan. Who wants to live in a world with no forgiveness and redemption? That's crazy. That's denying the very nature of human beings. People do things they regret. Who wants to live in a world without forgiveness and redemption? And if we read this account, the truth of Jesus showing us God, we read of a God who loves us, who is just, who is kind, who is extraordinarily courageous, strong, and prepared to forgive us for wandering away from him, ignoring him, and so forth. So I would encourage you to do that. I mean, you may never have done, I'm actually reading this at the moment with somebody who has never, ever opened a gospel. Never. So it's brand new. He's in his 50s. Glorious. And there will be any number of people here who would be prepared to do that with you, should you wish. One last very quick point, and that is this. Yes, generally. Yes, specifically. But that's not quite enough, is it? Personally? Well, if you're still on page 43 and Jesus' answer to Philip, just turn the page. Because as part of Jesus' answer to Philip, he says this, verse 16 on page 44. I will ask the Father, he will give you another helper, that is one like Jesus, to be with you forever. And then verse 17, you know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you. You can know him personally. For me, that happened in 1979. I've been asked to spend some time away from school. I was at boarding school. They asked me to spend a bit of time away from the school I was at for reasons that are none of your business. I went to stay with my granddad. It was December 1979. He was a very clear Christian. He said, Christianity, it's not just a religion, it's about a relationship, knowing him personally. And over that weekend, I realized just who Jesus claimed to be. The wickedness, really, the outrage of rejecting God in God's world. They have no excuse. And then the offer and possibility of forgiveness. It was a wonderful, my life's been changed ever since. I've always known. I know God personally. Now that changes everything. It's not self-help. It's not kind of manifesting some impersonal power. It's not me being a better me. It's having God himself dwell with and in, knowing him personally. It changes everything.